two primary events or episodes in Parshas Hayesara are, of course, the purchase of Maris HaMachpelah and the search for bride for Yitzchak. And Mirtz Hashem, I'd like to take a look at both of those episodes. Na'aneh al Rishon Rishon. We begin at the beginning. Sarah has passed away, and Avram sets about finding a burial place for her. What's most striking about the psukim and about the Torah's description of this purchase and of these negotiations, and we note that many psukim are devoted to this, it seems. A good 15 or so psukim. The pasuk doesn't just say that Avram buried her in Maris HaMachpelah. It describes to us how he came to be in possession of Maris HaMachpelah. And what's interesting is there is a term that recurs from all sides throughout these negotiations, and that is the word Shema'eni or Shema'enu. Listen to me, listen to us. Everyone's telling everyone else to listen to them. Avram says to Bnei Ches, Shema'enu, Shema'eni. They say to him, Shema'enu. And then Ephron gets involved and he says, Shema'eni. And it's interesting that this is such a motif. And the Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Aramah, phrases this question in rather blunt terms. I mean, he wonders aloud whether everyone was hard of hearing at the beginning of Parshas Chayesara. They're all telling each other to listen to each other. And he has an approach, al derech ha-parshanut, which is very, very insightful, as we will see. The Akedas Yitzhak, he's one of the Megurashei Sfarad, Rabbi Yitzhak Arama. And his Perush was written shortly before that of the Abarbanel. And he seems to be the forerunner of what is known as the Abarbanel's style, which is to unleash a slew of questions at the beginning and then systematically to try and deal with them, either with one unifying theory that takes care of all of them or with local treatments. And the Akedas Yitzhak already has that style. Half of the Akedas Yitzhak is philosophy, is machshava, and the other half is parshanut. He writes at length. I had a rather chastening conversation about this with the Rosh Yeshiva of Gates, Rabbi Avraham Guritz Shlita. I once asked him, looking back, I can't believe that what possessed me to ask him this, but I said, the Akedas Yitzhak is such an important sefer. Is there any way one can find out what he wants to say without reading the whole thing? These are the mistakes of one's youth. His response to me was, it's kedai to read the whole thing. So I haven't read the whole thing yet, but certainly that's the approach. And the Akedas Yitzhak begins at the beginning. Avram comes to Bnei Ches. This is in Pasuk Gimel. If we follow the psukim and pay attention to the details, we'll see the story will open up for us. Vayakam Avram me'al Bnei Meso. So he gets up, he's been with Sarah. Vayidaber o Bnei Ches lemor. He speaks to Bnei Ches. They're the crowd who will be somehow involved in the transaction. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. I'm a stranger, but I'm also a permanent resident with you, tenuli achuzas kever imachem, and therefore please give to me a holding for burial, the ekbara mesi milfanai. Now, what's important to realize is, in Avram, at the face of it, later on, of course, he'll pay plenty of money, but his opening request is, tenuli achuzas kever imachem, give me a holding. Originally, he wants it as a gift, says Akedas Yitzchak. Tenu, when you ask someone to give you something, it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't wish to pay for it. But rather what it means is, make it available to me. Tenu li achuzas kever. And in fact, Avram, of course, from the outset, is fully prepared to pay for it. And it's in this vein that he introduces himself with the words, or characterizes himself with the words, ger v'toshav. And all the mefarshim are wondering, number one, why does he introduce himself as ger v'toshav? And secondly, there seems to be something of a tension between these two terms, because a ger is not a toshav, and vice versa. Ger has the connotation of a sojourner, toshav is someone who's more permanent, and you're either one or the other. That's a connotation which is lost on us, lahavdil, in modern Hebrew. Whenever a person describes where they live, or they ask someone else where they live, they will always say, Eifo atagar. And they don't mean, where do you sojourn? They mean, where do you live? Even a person has been living in Israel for 40 years, ani gar ba'aretz for 40 years. Depending on his relationship with a landlord, it may feel temporary, you know, at any time. But we use the term ger in that very all-encompassing way. But the strict connotation of ger is someone who's not permanent. And toshav is permanent. So is he ger or a toshav? Rashi comments, as do other mefarshim. And of course, he's both. Why does he mention that he's both? He says, okay, that's Yitzhak, because he's coming to explain on the one hand, why does he need a holding? I mean, why for burial, why doesn't he have one? Everyone else has one, why doesn't he have one? The answer to that, why he doesn't naturally possess Achuzas Kever, is because he's a ger. That means that he wasn't born here, and therefore he doesn't naturally, he didn't inherit, doesn't have a family holding. So ger means he doesn't have one, but toshav means he's fully capable of procuring one. In other words, he's not a ger in the sense that here today, gone tomorrow, and he may not make good on his payments. Toshav means he has established himself, which means he is certainly capable and of means to pay for it. And that is his request, tenuli achuzas kever. Now, the people of Bnei Ches, whose character has yet to be determined, but they answer, Vayanu Bnei Ches as Avraham le'morlo. So they answer and say, Shemo'enu Adoni. So they're the first ones to say, listen to us. And already we're wondering why they need to tell him to listen. He's asked them a question. He's clearly listening to them. They say, Nesi Elokim Atah B'Zocheinu, you're a prince of God. B'mivchar Kivareinu Kivoris Meisecha, you can bury your deceased in the choice of our plots. Ish Mimenu Es Kivor Lo Yichle Mimcha Mikvor Meisecha, no man amongst us will stop you from burying your deceased. What exactly is the meaning of this response? Well, Akedas Yitzhak explains that the people of Ches, and perhaps this is the way they would deal with each other, when they hear Avram say, Tenu li achuzas kever, and he's talking to them, it sounds to them as if he's demanding that one of them give up their holding for nothing. He's asking for a volunteer. So he speaks to this group of people, Tenuli achuzas kever, from between you, will one of you give me an achuzas kever? Now, given that's how they understand that he's requesting a gift, how do they respond to that? Well, that depends. If you take their words at face value, it sounds like a yes. Because they're saying you're Nesi Elokim, and you're in such distress, and none of us would ever withhold their Achuzas Kever from you. So that sounds like a yes. Until you pay attention to what they're saying. Because if someone asks you for something, and your response is, I won't withhold it from you, that doesn't sound like you're volunteering. It doesn't really sound like a yes. It sounds like a no, really, except what can I do if you're going to take it from me? No one says that we'd all love to give you one. They say, no one's going to say no. And in a sense, this is the beginning of the negotiating side of things. And that's why it begins with the word Shemo'enu Adoni. Listen to us. Because in any negotiation, you want to make sure that the other side understands exactly what you mean, even if exactly what you mean isn't exactly what you say. And ironically, even the term Shemo'eni, listen to me, can have two meanings. The surface meaning of listen to me means, I hope my message is loud and clear. The inner meaning of listen to me means, I hope you don't get distracted by my words for missing exactly what I mean to say. Because very often when it comes to these types of transactions, you say one thing, but you may mean something else. If you've been having a meeting, and one of the sides gets up and says, it's been a pleasure, they don't mean it's been a pleasure. They mean the meeting is over. And if you don't understand that, you may be talking to someone who's no longer listening. And so on and so forth. And therefore, the irony is that even when they say, listen to us, that could mean two things. There's many people there that they're looking to, they don't wish to seem in any way deficient. And therefore, Shema'ini means we're saying, talking loud and clear. But it's also a message to Avram. If you pay attention carefully to what we're saying, you'll understand that what sounds like a yes is really a no. No one is going to give it to you. No one, if you choose someone, they're not going to say no. But if you're waiting for a volunteer, no one's going to volunteer. Now, the truth is that this polite refusal, really, and moreover, they conclude by saying, no one will withhold from you mikavor mesecha, from burying your deceased. Why do they mention that, mikavor mesecha? What they're saying is that no one will refuse from you because we can't refuse. It's your time of need. In other words, what type of people would we be if you asked someone for a burial plot and they said no? I mean, you are in a time of need. Your deceased is there in front of you. Which on the one hand shows again, it seems a measure of understanding. You're in such a time of need. But on a deeper level, it's really a barb against Avram, because what they're saying is, it's wrong of you to take advantage of your time of need to force someone to give you something that they otherwise wouldn't give you. That's low of you, Avram. Mikavor mesecha, how could someone say no at a time? Which is a nice way of saying, how could you ask at such a time for such a thing? Okay, so negotiations have started. At this point, Avram responds, because the truth is that they misunderstood what he meant. Because when he says tenuli, they took it at face value that he's really asking them to give it for nothing. But Vayakam Avraham, Avram gets up, Vayishtachu la'amaretz l'bnei ches. He bows to the Amoretz, he bows to the Bnei Ches. And we also notice there's a lot of bowing, which is also protocol. And what that means is he bows to them, which is a very external act, because the externalities of what they've said sounds very proper. But then he begins to talk to them in a way that it's clear that he's understood what they really meant to say. Vayidaberi tam leimor. So the first thing he tells them is, im yeshes nafshechem nekvores meisil mufanai. If you're willing to help me, so shima'uni, so I'm asking you to listen to me, meaning you did not hear me properly initially, because when I said tenuli and you thought I was asking for a gift, so then you clammed up and you weren't so forthcoming. But listen to me, because that's not what I mean. Number one, I'm not going to ask any of you, that is to say, at random. There's someone specific, and therefore all of you who are not that person should be willing to help me, because none of the others are under threat. Shima'uni upiguli be'efron ben socha. So one of you called Ephraim ben Socha, if the others of you would help. So all of a sudden, everybody else realizes that they're not going to have to part with anything. And on the contrary, if Ephraim has to do this, then no one else has to. So they'll all be on side with Avram. But then Avram in Pasuk Tes elucidates what he meant when he said, give it to me. V'yitein li, he will give me a smaras ha-machpelah shelo, the cave of Machpelah shebek tzesadeu, bekesef malei yitneno li. When I said tenuli, I didn't mean for nothing. I mean tenuli bekesef maleim. I'm fully prepared to pay. So Avram is explaining to them that what he originally meant to say, if they would have heard it clearer, they would not have thought that he was asking for a gift. Rather, he's certainly willing to pay, and specifically from Ephron. Now, this is the first we hear of Ephron. Pasuk Yud, be'Ephron yoshev, Besoch b'nei ches. Ephron is sitting amongst the b'nei ches. What is the meaning of those words? Rashi comments, and the Akedat Yitzhak has his approach. Ephron Yosha besoch b'nei ches, according to the Akedat Yitzhak, it means, in simplest terms, He was literally sitting amongst them, which is interesting because what that means is that he was part of the original group who was addressed by Avram. There's however many dozens of people there, more or less, and one of them is Ephron. Avram doesn't know who Ephron is. He doesn't know which of them is Ephron, but Ephron is Yoshe B'soch B'nei Ches. Now, because that's true, that means that Ephron has already spoken. He hasn't spoken as an individual, but he has spoken as one of the B'nei Ches when they originally responded to Avram. And now this is where Ephron gets involved. So Ephron now speaks up. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lo Adoni Shimoeni. So now he's saying to Avram, you listen to me. Meaning, you misunderstood what we meant when we originally responded to you and said that no one would withhold it from you, and you thought that that was a no, which by the way it was, but now that Ephron hears that there's money involved, so the no retroactively became a yes, and says, if you would have heard us correctly, you would not have thought that we were reluctant. On the contrary, we're very willing. That's why he says, Hasodeno Satiloch. I've already given you the field. When did you do that? This is the first time we're hearing from you. Well, yes, as an individual. But what he's saying is that we all responded unanimously that everyone is prepared, whoever the person is prepared to give it to you. So Asadena Satiloch. Ephron is comfortable saying he's prepared to give it once he's heard that Avram is prepared to pay for it. That's when it's safe to offer it as a gift, when you've already been offered money for it, because he knows that he'll get money for it. So he can now, ki'ilu, go back to the original response and make it out to have been an actual yes. And when Avram really heard what they were saying, that it was a no, Ephron is saying, but you didn't really hear it because you were reading too much into it. Really, it was a yes. So this is already quite involved. And that's how these things go. Le'inei b'nei amina satialach kevor meisecha. So now it's Avram's turn to talk. Ephron has told him that it was always my intention to give it to you as a gift. But Avram responds, Yud Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayidaber el Ephron, Ve'oznei Am Ha'aretz Le'emor, Ach Imata Lu Shemo'eni. No, I would like you to listen to me. And what does that mean? It means, an Ach here, meaning only, meaning you're the one who's not listening. Why? Because the reason why you said that you would give it to me, to make me feel better, is because you thought originally I wanted a gift, but then when no one was forthcoming, then I offered to pay, and you made me feel bad for that by saying that you were prepared to give it as a gift. You don't realize that from the very outset I never meant it to be given as a gift, but rather nosati, also in the past tense, nosati kesef asod, that means from the very outset I was prepared to give money. So don't think that you had to change, or don't think that I changed my plan when I saw no one was giving it as a gift. That's when I offered money. So you're trying to make me feel bad for asking for a gift in the first place. I was always planning on offering money. So, at this point, Ephraim knows that he's going to get the money. And now the question is how much? And how can he ask for such an amount without also sounding bad? The answer is to tell Avram to listen to him, which he does in Pasuk Yodalad Vayan Ephronas Avraham Leimolo, Adoni Shema'eni, listen to me. And at this point, it's listen good, because we're about to talk about money. So what does he say? Eretz Abam Yoshekel Kesef B'ini Vincha Mahi Ve'esmeischa Kevor. A land worth 400 shekels, what's that between me and you? I hope you heard that very well. And once again, Adoni Shema'eni means, on the face of it means, listen how generous I am. But beneath the surface, it means, listen exactly to the amount that I'm saying, because I know that you're not going to take it as a gift, but don't forget that this is the amount that I mentioned. Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vayishma Avram El Ephron. Avram heard exactly what Ephron was saying, and there was no gift offered at all. That was just a polite way of saying this is the amount to be made payable to Ephron Incorporated. Vayishma Avram El Ephron, Vayishkol Avram Le Ephron, That money that was spoken about so magnanimously was really the price. So these are the comments of the Akedas Yitzchak, and it gets more and more involved. It's like Chad Gadya, to try and remember who said what and what they thought that they originally said, but they didn't really say it. And in a sense, part of the reason why the Torah is telling us all of this is because this is happening on the day that Avram's wife passed away, on this tragic occasion. But you see that Avram, he takes care, great care, not to offend anyone, not to insult anyone. He plays the game exactly the way that they are manipulating it. And Avram maintains his poise, even on this very, very sad occasion. And that's really to learn a great deal about what it means to act b'derech eretz, to act b'nimus, under all circumstances. So, as we said, the guiding word, which now recurs 7 or 8 times, I think, at the beginning of the parasha, Shema'eni, Shema'eni, that's really the key. Who wants whom to listen to whom, and in what way do they want to be listened to? And that's really the leading word in the parsha. So from there, we come to Avram's charge to Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzhak, and that's in Perek Kafdalet. And the pasuk that I'd like to focus on is pasuk Dalet. So Perek Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Dalet. So just to begin with, Pasuk Gimel, Vashpiach HaBashem Elokei HaShamayim VeElokei HaAretz. So he makes Eliezer take a Shavua. Asher lo tikach isha livni v'bno saknani asher anochi yoshev bikirbo. Do not under any circumstances take a girl from b'no saknani. Rather, where should you go? Ki el artzi vel moladati teleich. I want you to go to my land, I want you to go to my birthplace. And the question that we need to find out is, where is Artsi and where is Moladati? Where is Avram's land? Where is Avram's birthplace? And we will see Rishonim, the greatest of the Rishonim, Rashi and Ramban, devoted much attention to this question. Because ultimately, Avram Avinu ended up in Eretz Canaan. But the Torah speaks about where he came from, and therefore we need to do our best to understand exactly what the Torah means to say. And on this matter, we will find that opinion is divided between Rashi and Ramban. Where did Avram come from? Where was he born? Rashi understands that Avram was born in Ur Kasdim. And in fact, Rashi says this in Pasuk Zion, when Avram says Hashem Elokei HaShamayim, reading Pasuk Zion, Hashem lekochani mi beis avi o me'eretz meladati, Hashem who took me from my father's house and from the land where I was born. Rashi says beis avi is Haran, where his father settled permanently, and eretz meladati is Ur Kasdim. So that's black on white. As far as Rashi is concerned, the place that Avram was born is Ur Kasdim. That's where he began. From there, they moved to Haran, and then Terach stayed there. Avram moved onwards still to Eretz Canaan. However, the Ramban differs. Ramban understands that Avram was born in Haran. According to the analysis of the Ramban, he was born in Haran. They moved for a while to Ur Kasdim, and that's where the whole episode of Ur Kasdim happened. And then they moved back to Haran. And the Ramban marshals numerous proofs for his position. And one of the most compelling of them is this pasuk, Pasuk Dalet, where Avram tells Eliezer, do not take a girl from Benos Haknani, rather go back to Artsi and Moladati. Now, says Ramban, let us consider. According to Rashi, Avram is born in Ur Kasdim, which means, according to Rashi, Moladati in Pasuk Dalet refers to Ur Kasdim. Now, says Ramban, let me put myself into Rashi's shoes, and we will see that however one understands the Pasuk cannot work. Namely, there are two terms here, Artsi, my land, and Moladati. And the important question is, are they the same place? Is Artsi or Maladati two ways of saying the same place? Or are they two different places? Says Ramban, let's take the possibilities one by one. if we say that they're both the same place, and remember, we know where one of them is, we know where Moladati is, according to Rashi, it's Orkastim, and if Arzi and Moladati are one and the same place, it turns out that Avram is telling Eliezer to take a girl for Yitzhak from Orkastim. Arzi and Moladati, he was born in Orkastim, Arzi and Moladati are one and the same, he's telling him to go to Orkastim. Says Rambam, well, that's of course impossible, because we see that Eliezer did not go there, he went to Haran. So if it's going to be one place, look where he went, that's where you'll find out where that place is. However, we could perhaps say, maybe, that Arzi and Moladati are not the same, as if to say, Arzi, my land, is Haran, which is where Eliezer went, and Moladati is Orkastim. And what Avram means to do is to give him two alternatives then. First, to go to Arzi, which of course is Haran, subsequently to go to Eretz Moladati, or Kastim, if things do not work out in Haran. And he went to Haran first, he went to option A first, and it worked out. Says Ramban, that can't be. It's unacceptable. Because there's no way that Avram could refer to a land outside of Eretz Yisrael as his land, unless he was born there. In other words, what attaches the land to a person? His land really is Eretz Canaan. How could he call any place outside of Israel Arzi, my land? There's only one justification. The place that you were born, you can call that your land. Which means that if Arzi can only be called my land because that's where I was born, so then we're back to square one. Because if Arzi is the place I was born, it must be that Arzi and Moladati are the same place. And once they're the same place, he only told them to go to one place. And look where Eliezer went. He went to Haran. Now you know that that place, known as Arzi / Moladati, is Haran. Which is why I say, or one of the reasons, says Rabban, why I say that Avram was actually born in Haran. So, that's quite a heavy parshanut question. Essentially, he looks at our pasuk, he goes through each of the possibilities, and shows how none of them can point to Orkastim. The conclusion that must be drawn is that Avram's Moladati is Haran, and that's called Moladati, it's called Arzi, that's where he was born, that's why it's called his land, that's where Eliezer went, and that's that. Now, of course, we note that the words of Rashi didn't disappear, even as Ramban has his issues with it. Ramban has drawn his conclusions, but nonetheless, Rashi has his position. But how would he respond to the questions of Ramban? So, none other than the two primary Mefarshei Rashi, the Gur Ariyeh and the Mizrahi, enter into the fray. And each one gives their own response to explain the position of Rashi. And each one will bring with it their own chidushim. The Gur Ariyeh, the Maharal, explains that indeed, when Avram says to go to Haran, when Avram says to go to Arzi, to my land, he is referring to Haran. In other words, on this issue, the Gur Ariyeh takes issue with the Ramban. According to the Ramban, it could never be called Arzi unless he was born there. Says the Gur Ariyeh, no, there's another reason why a land could be called Arzi, my land, and that is because he has family there in Haran, which he does. And moreover, says the Gur Ariyeh, when Avram tells Eliezer to go to Arzi and Moladati, he's only referring to Haran. That is to say, Arzi is Haran because his family is there, and even Moladati is Haran. He doesn't mention Orkastim at all. Now, of course, that's difficult for us because this is Rashi. Rashi says that Avram was born in Orkastim. Avram says, go to Moladati, where I was born. How can the Gur Ariyeh say that he is only referring to Haran? Says Gur Ariyeh, very simply. Look again at Pasuk Zion. When Avram says, Hashem Elokei Hashamayim, Asher Lokachani Mibeis Avi, from my father's household, Ume Eretz Moladati, from the land where I was born. In Pasuk Dalet it says, go to Arzi and Moladati. So Pasuk Dalet refers to a place called Moladati. Pasuk Zayin refers to a place called Eretz Moladati. Is there a difference between Moladati and Eretz Moladati? Says the Gur Aryeh, there is. And how do we know? What is the difference? The answer will come from Rashi himself. Later on in Parshas Miketz. If you have all of Rashi in front of you, like the Gur Aryeh, life is much simpler. In Parshas Miketz, when the brothers, Yosef's brothers, they come back to Yaakov, and Yaakov says, why did you volunteer so much information? Why did you tell them that you have a son, that one of the brothers is missing and the other son's back home and you got us into trouble? So the brothers say, we had no choice. He started asking us all these questions. Sha'ol sha'al lanu ha'ish. He asked us questions. Lanu ule moladetenu. He asked us about ourselves and moladetenu. That's an important word. That's our word. What does umoladetenu mean? Rashi says moladetenu means ule mishpachtenu. He started asking us about our moledet, about our family, about our people. He asked us the questions. We couldn't answer. He was the one that started. So what's interesting is we see that Rashi himself has translated the word moladity by itself, not as a place, but as a reference to a family. And therefore, says Gur Aryeh, so now look again at Pasuk Dalet. When Avram tells Eliezer, I want you to go to Arzi and Moladity, and Eliezer goes to Choron, and Ramban says, well, why is he going to Choron? Wasn't Avram born in Ur Kasdim, according to you, Rashi? Says Gur Aryeh, Pasuk Dalet has no reference to the place that he was born. Arzi is called Choron because his family is there, and Moladity refers to his family. And in fact, evidence of this understanding of Rashi is really from our psukim themselves. Because Pasuk Dalet mentions Moladity, and Rashi doesn't say anything. Pasuk Zayin mentions the word Eretz Moladity, and Rashi says, you know, he was born, Ur Kasdim. Why did Rashi wait three psukim? Why didn't Rashi tell me that he was born in Ur Kasdim in Pasuk Dalet, which already mentions the word Moladity? Why did he wait till Pasuk Zayin? The answer is, says Maharal, that Moladity and Eretz Moladity are two separate things. Eretz Moladity is the place he was born. That's in Pasuk Zayin. Rashi says that's Ur Kasdim. But Moladity has got nothing to do with where he was born. It's about his family. And therefore, says Gur Aryeh, there is no evidence one way or the other from this Pasuk that Avram wasn't born in Ur Kasdim. The place that he's telling Eliezer to go has got nothing to do with where he was born. And moreover, this is further verified by the fact that when Eliezer comes and retells the story, and that's why Parshas Chayesara is as long as it is, because Eliezer tells the whole story, so he says that Avram told him, don't go to Eretz Canaan, but go to my mishpacha, ki el mishpachti vel beis avi. Go to my mishpacha. Now, where did Avram tell him to go to his mishpacha? He said, Arzi moladati. Says the Gur Aryeh, moladati means mishpachti. So that's further evidence of that fact. Although, as we will see, there are certain things that Eliezer changed. So what he retold is not necessarily evidence as to what Avram originally said to him. But nonetheless, this is the opinion of the Gur Aryeh. Moving from there to the Mizrachim, the study of Rashi is a very serious thing. And again, the Ramban says that Arzi must be the place that he was born, says the Mizrahi. I think Rashi agrees. I think when Rashi says, I want you to go to Arzi a Moladati, he's sending him to Ur Kasdim. He is. Now that's quite a thing to say. Avram originally told Eliezer to go to Ur Kasdim. That's where I was born. That's my land. That's where I was born. Why would he send him to Ur Kasdim? Says the Mizrahi. Because that's where Avram thinks his family is. If we just track the history of Avram's family, remember, they all started out in Ur Kasdim. There's three brothers, Avram, Haran, and Nachor. And Terach is the father. Now, in the end of Parshas Noach, two things happen. Number one, Haran dies. And number two, the Pasuk says that Terach took Avram to Haran. And the one person who kind of goes missing in this whole equation is Nachor. He's the only brother left. And the last time Avram saw him is when they said goodbye to each other in Ur Kasdim. Avram then moves to Haran and subsequently to Eretz Canaan. And as far as he is concerned, his surviving family has remained in Ur Kasdim. What he doesn't realize is that over the course of time, at some point during the decades, Nachor also made his way from Ur Kasdim to Haran, as indeed we find him there. But that wasn't mentioned. That didn't happen in the end of Parshas Noach. Avram doesn't know about that. And therefore, when he sends Eliezer to Arzio Modality, the place that I was born, he really is sending him to Ur Kasdim. So what happened? What happened was that Nachor did move to Haran. Now Haran is on the way to Ur Kasdim, as we see by the fact that when Terach moved from Ur Kasdim to Eretz Canaan, they stopped off in Haran. It is on the way, which means as Eliezer makes his way back to Ur Kasdim, he also stops off in Haran. And when he does, he finds out that Nachor actually lives there. At that point, there's little purpose served in continuing to Ur Kasdim. No one's there anymore. He is appraised of the situation of this development that Avram's remaining family now lives in Aram Naharaim, in Haran, and that's where he conducts the test over there. So according to the Mizrahi, Eliezer does not end up going not to Arzi and not Moladati. They're both references to Ur Kasdim. He never makes it to Ur Kasdim because there's no point. He stops on the way and finds out that the family has actually moved to Haran. And in fact, says the Mizrahi, this will explain to us the dual expression as Eliezer travels. The Pasuk says, Pasuk Yud, Vayikacha Eved, Asara Gemalim Mikmalei Adonav, he takes these 10 camels, Vayelech V'chol Tuv Adonav Biyado, takes all those possessions, Vayakam Vayelech, he goes, El Aram Naharayim, El Ir Nachor, to Aram Naharayim, to the city of Nachor. Now, why is it described in these two ways? Firstly, by place, and secondly, by who lives there. I mean, we know who lives there, that's why he's been sent there. When Yaakov goes to Haran, it says he went to Haran. It doesn't say he went to Haran, to the city of Lavan. Lavan lives there. That's why he went there. So why does the Pasuk state that he went to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nachor? Says the Mizrahi, because originally he went to Aram Naharaim because it's on the way to Ur Kasdim. But subsequently he found out that it was actually now the city of Nachor. It's a separate piece of information because he found out about it only after he arrived there. He arrived in Aram Naharaim only to discover that it is currently Ir Nachor. So here we have three different interpretations as to what the words Arzi and Molalati might mean. According to the Ramban, they both refer to the same place, my land where I was born, which equals Haran, which is where he went. According to the Mizrahi, Arzi and Molalati do refer to the same place where he was born, or Kasdim, which he never made it to. And according to the Gur Aryeh, Arzi is not where he was born, but it's his land, Haran, and Molarity is his mishpacha there. So that's quite an involved machlokas in Parshanut. Doesn't get bigger than that. Rashi, Ramban, and the Gedolim Mefarshi Rashi, the Mizrahi, and the Gur Aryeh, and I didn't even venture into any other of the Mefarshi Rashi on this matter, for reasons which I think you'll understand. So, having mentioned briefly that Eliezer retells the story, let's take a look at some of the elements that Eliezer, as he tells over the story, are not exactly the way that it originally happened. And that's really the reason why the Torah retells it, in order to pay attention to the points of divergence. And of course, we'll need to wonder, why did Eliezer change anything? Why not just tell everything exactly the way that it was? So once again, if we have the psukim in front of us, so let us begin. Pasuk Gimel. Avram says, "Va'ashpiacha b'Hashem Elokei Hashemayim Elokei Haaretz." So he makes Eliezer take an oath. "Asher lo tikach isha livni, don't take a wife from my son. Mibnos haKenani, from the daughters of the Kenani, Asher anochi yoshev b'kirbo, with whom I am dwelling b'kirbo, in his midst." Okay. More or less straightforward. When Eliezer retells the story, and this is in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, so he says, pardon me, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Vayashbieni Adoni Lemor, my master made me take an oath saying, Lo tikach isha livni, mibno sakanani, asher nechi yoshev, be'artso. So that's an interesting difference. Originally, Avram said, described Eretz Canaan, asher anachi yoshev bikirbo, and Eliezer changed it to asher anachi yoshev be'artso. What would be behind that change that we need to find out? Secondly, and this we've already noted, in Pasuk Dalad, the place that Eliezer is to go to is ki el artzi vel moladati telech, my land and my moladati, whatever that means. Eliezer, in Pasuk Lamed Ches, phrases it im lo el beis avi telech ve el mishpachti. So he changes the phraseology again. What was originally artzi and moladati has become beis avi and mishpachti. And again, we need to find out what's behind that. Eliezer asks the question, I guess he felt it had to be asked, what happens if she doesn't want to come after me? Should Eliezer maybe go there? Of course, the answer is no. But the way the answer is phrased, Pasuk Zion, Hashem Elokei Hashamayim Asher Lekochani Mibeis Avi V'Me'eretz Meladati, Hashem who took me from my father's house, from the land of my birth, Vasher Dibali, Vasher Nishbali, Leimor, the one who promised me, Lezarach Etin Es Aretz Azos, all of that, Hu Yishlach Malcho Lefanecha, he'll help you and it will work out. And if it doesn't work out, then don't, you are absolved. So it's a very lengthy introduction to get to the point of Hashem will send a Malach to help you. It gets curtailed a great deal in Pasuk Mem. Because when Eliezer retells this part of, I asked, maybe she won't want to come after me. Should Yitzchak go over there? And he said, no. Vayomer Eli Hashem Asher Hisalachti Lefanav Hashem before whom I have walked. Yishlach Malacho Itach. He'll send a malach with you. Interesting. What for Avram originally was much more than that. Asher Lekachani Mibeis Avi Meretz Meladati Asher Nishbali Asher Dibali. And Eliezer just compacts all of that into Hashem Asher Salachti Lefanav. Okay. Finally, and this is interesting, again, these nuances, some of them are very delicate. When Eliezer asks Rivka who she is, well, he doesn't know who she is, he asks this girl who she is, in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, she introduces herself. And what does she say? Vatomer Elav, Bas Besuel Anochi, I'm the daughter of Besuel, Ben Milka. Besuel is the son of Milka, Ashi Aldan Nachor, that she bore to Nachor. So it's interesting that she introduced herself as, or her lineage, as the daughter of Besuel, and Besuel is the son of Milka. In Pasuk Mem Zayin, when Eliezer gets to this point, Vo'eshalosa, I asked her, Va'omar, Basmiat, whose daughter are you? Vatomer Bas Besuel ben Nachor, Asher Yaldal Lo Milka. I'm the daughter of Besuel, who's the son of Nachor, that Milka bore for him. Interesting, what's changed? I mean, the parents are still the same parents, but the order's been reversed. In actuality, she introduced her father Besuel as the son of Milka, who bore him to Nachor. When, in Eliezer's words, she's the daughter of Besuel, the son of Nachor, that Milka bore for him. What difference does it make if she's the daughter of Milka, who bore for Nachor, the son of Nachor, who that Milka bore for him? It's the same. I mean, arithmetically, the result is the same. But he did shift the order. And what's behind all of this? So this is, all of these questions and more actually are discussed by Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the Ksava Kabbalah. And he states that the guiding principle here is that the way things actually happened and were phrased and were told is, of course, when it really happened between Avram and Eliezer. Eliezer changes things. Why will he change anything? He changes things because he comes to Rivka's family. He gets the measure of them rather quickly and realizes that he may need to tweak certain things and maybe need to omit certain things and maybe need to sanitize certain things in order to bring about a positive reaction from them. And let's see examples of that. So the classic example, really, is that whereas Avram said, I want you to go to Artsi and Moladati. And certainly, if Artsi and Moladati means my land and the place that I was born, that's quite general. Mishpacha doesn't like to be treated in that general way, because it almost sounds like it could have been anyone. I mean, as it happens, it was you, which is very nice. But, so after the fact that it's really Avram's family, so they might not take kindly to the being told that Avram said, I want you to go back to my land, because it sounds like it doesn't even make a difference who. Could be them, could be someone else. And that's why he finesses it into Arti Modality, become much more personalized. I want you to go to my family, I want you to go to my father's household, which of course is them. It's nice for them to feel that it was always about them, specifically and personally, from the very beginning. And by the way, it's for this very reason that there's one thing, if he wishes to bring about a positive response from Eliezer's family, from Rivka's family, there's one thing Eliezer certainly cannot repeat word for word. And that's the point where he asks Avram, what happens if she doesn't want to come after me? Should Yitzhak go? And Hashem says, under no circumstances, Hashem will help you. How does he say that? Hashem Elokei HaShemayim Elokei HaAretz, Asher LeKochani MiBeis Avi UMe'eretz Moladati, Hashem who took me away, who allowed me to escape and detach myself from my father's family, from the place that I was born, he'll help you. That means that the highest praise that Avram can think of for HaKadosh Baruch Hu on that occasion is the one who allowed me to leave my family. Now, as long as it's in another country and it's Avram talking to Eliezer, that's one thing. When it's Eliezer talking to that family that Avram was actually referring to, who he can't stop thanking God for having taken him away from them, so that might not go over so well. And therefore, that whole Asher lekachani mibeis avi, etc., becomes glossed over. Asher esalachti lefanah, Hashem before whom I walked. Make of that what you will. You are all wonderful people. It's got nothing to do with you. So that explains that change as well. A fascinating point, because the very subtle distinction. Avram referred to the land of Canaan as the land Asher Anochi Yoshev Bikirbo, and Eliezer changed it to saying Asher Anochi Yoshev Be'artso. What's the difference between in his midst or in his land? The difference, as the Ksava Kabbalah is, whose land is it? When Avram refers to the land of Canaan, from the people of Canaan, that I'm in their midst, he doesn't say I'm in their land. Why does he not say I'm in their land? Because it's his land. And the land has been promised to him. Yeah, there's all these people around, and I'm in their midst, but I'm not in their land. They're in my land. Eliezer was wary of saying something like that to Rivka's family, because they may feel that Avram is completely deluded. He thinks that he owns the land. They may have misgivings about sending their daughter to such a place. He could get into a lot of trouble with talk like that. And therefore, Eliezer takes the much more modified term, I'm in their land. He doesn't get involved as to whose land it is. One family who thinks that God has given him the entire country and he'd like to invite your daughter to join that family. They may feel that has no basis in reality and may lead to certain reluctance on their part. And therefore, he doesn't get involved in whose land it is. It's their land and he just doesn't want to marry his daughter, his son, to marry any of them. He wants to marry someone from his own family. Finally, we mentioned that the way Rivka introduces herself, it's again a slight change, but there's so much in these capillaries of the psukim, where her father is Besuel, the son of Milcah. She mentions Milcah first, but as he comes to the family, he mentions Nachor first. Well, what's behind that? Who comes first? Well, the truth is that logic and the norm dictates that he would mention the father first. I mean, that's how it's always done in Chumash, and that seems to be the way that it would be the standard, would be the default. So why does Rivka actually mention that Besuel, she mentioned Besuel is the daughter of son of Milcah before mentioning Nachor? Why does she give precedence to Milcah? The answer, says the Ksava Kabbalah, is that Milcah is more choshev than Nachor is. Why? Because Milcah is the daughter of Haran. I mean, it's the way that the family worked. I mean, Haran had three children, Lot, Sarai, and Milcah. Sarai married Avram, Milcah married Nachor. Milcah comes from a more choshev branch of the family than Nachor. Why? Because she's the daughter of Haran. And this statement of the Ksava Kabbalah really corroborates a comment that we had a couple of weeks ago from the Chasam Sofer, that Haran really goes down in history as a tzaddik. That's important in the sense that we know the story with Haran. Avram went into a custom and came out. Haran sat on the fence a little bit, wasn't sure what to do. He says, if Avram comes out, I'll go in. And Avram came out from the furnace, and Haran went in, and he was killed. The biggest mistake to make about that story is to think that Haran wasn't really a serious person. Because, you see, he went into the furnace, and he was killed there. He didn't come out. But says the Chasam Sofer, I mean, most people who go into a furnace don't come out. He wasn't expecting to come out. Why would he be? He knows he's not Avram. The point is, he really didn't know. But if Avram, if a miracle happens to Avram, now I know. And if I know, I'm prepared to give my life for it, which he did. And Haran is the first person in history who willingly sacrificed his life for Yichud Hashem, for monotheism. And Avram never forgets that. That's why he takes care of Lot with all his ups and downs until he can't contain him anymore. And Milcah is a daughter from that family. So because of the Mesiras Nefesh of Haran, Milcah is mentioned first. But that's the way Rivka looks at things. But again, when Eliezer comes to Rivka's family, he sees that Mesiras Nefesh doesn't rate that highly on their system of values, and so he reverts to the default, and she mentioned Nachor first, and Milcah just happens to be the wife. But she didn't say that. She mentioned Milcah first, because she has the eminence here. So these are some very interesting observations with regards to attention to detail, what was there actually said, and what Eliezer said was said. And of course, the overarching comment here is that it's really in praise of Eliezer, because as we know, Eliezer, for us, it's like, well, naturally you want it to work out. But Eliezer did not naturally want it to work out, because he had his own ideas as to who Yitzhak should marry, namely his own daughter. Now, he's been given a bit of a rejection by Avram, but nonetheless, his own interest is that it should work out for his daughter. So it's overwhelmingly to his credit that he rethinks the story in a way that will work out best for Avram. That's a tribute to Eliezer. One may have said, listen, I told the story as it was. They reacted badly. What can I do? Should I lie? Should I? What should I have done? Should I have made things up? And the answer is yes. And he does. To go the extra mile and to be thinking on his feet in this way, to be fine-tuning the story as he goes along, to make things work out for Avram, that's a tribute to really what the faithfulness of Eliezer. And Avram trusted him for a reason. Even after rejection, he went out of his way to make things work for Avram. I'd just like to conclude with a classic vort, really. It's difficult to know how else to characterize it. And it comes from the mouth of Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz before he was Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz. That is to say, he was a young child, 6 or 7. He was just Yonasan Eibershitz. And he already had a reputation developed as an Ilu, as a child prodigy. And the older people of the town, they used to kind of get a sense of exactly, you know, who they were dealing with. So one time, one of the members of the community, he finds himself alone in the shul together with this younger Yonasan. And he says, okay, they say that you're a bright young boy. Tell me a vort. Tell me about Torah. So Yonasan Eibershitz said, well, you know, give me a book and tell me what to talk about. So the only book available in shul was a siddur. They don't make shuls like that anymore. But back in the day, shuls only had siddurim. So he takes a siddur, and so he opens it up, to that place just before Psukkah de Zimra, Rabbi Shmar Lomer, Bishloshesir Midas HaTorah Nedreshes Behem. You've got those 13 ways that the Torah is expounded. It's just after the Korbanos, just before Psukkah de Zimra, and that's it. He said, no, we'll say something. So Yonason Ivishus looks it over and says, okay, I have three questions. Question number one, Rabbi Shmar Lomer. What type of name is it for a Jewish rabbi to be called Rabbi Ishmael? It's good China. He's hardly the most Jewish of characters in the Torah. And all of it, and lo and behold, there's a Rabbi Ishmael somehow. And he's a very respectable Tan. How did that happen? That's my first question. My second question is, we introduce that paragraph by saying, Rabbi Ishmael says. That's not a correct way to introduce it if it's only one person talking. Because you say Rabbi so-and-so says if he's arguing with someone. So the first person says this way, and Rabbi so-and-so says otherwise. But he's the only one talking. The correct way to say it would be, Omar Rabbi Shmuel, b'shloshes emidos, atarin adreshes b'hem. So that's my second question. And the third question is, two of those methods or ways of darshaning the Torah are called klal uprat and prat uklal. General reference and then specific and then general. If the general comes first, you darshan it one way. That's one rule. If specific comes first, you darshan it a different way. So my third question is, says Yonus and Irish Shutz, how can there ever be rules about this? Do we not know ein mukta m'mu'ucha b'Torah? That you never really know what came first in the Torah. So how can you start to say, well, that came first, the general came first at the klal uprat, and the particular came first at the prat uklal. Ein mukta m'mu'ucha b'Torah? That's it. Those are my questions. And says the young Yonason Ivershutz, I have one answer that will explain all of this. And it's based on Parshas Chayesara. You see, the Gemara tells us that when we say Ein Mukta M'mu'ucha B'Torah, that you never really know what came first and what came second. So the Gemara says that's only between two separate topics, I mean, two separate sections of the Torah. You never know if what's written first necessarily came first. But within the same topic, I mean, let's say within the same pasuk or something like that, you know. Right, or within the same chapter, same paragraph, you know, and hence, if in the same paragraph you've got the klal is first, you know it's klal uprat, and if the prat is first, you know it's prat uklal. With regards to the question as to how a tana can be called Rabbi Yishmael, I mean, how can it be called after Yishmael? Was Yishmael a Rasha? Says the Yonason Ivershutz, he was a Rasha, but Rashi tells us, as we know, that in the end of his days, he did tshuva. We're still waiting for his grandchildren to come around. But he himself did tshuva at the end of his days, and tribute is given to that, because someone was actually named after him, right? It goes after the chitam. In the end of his days, he was a tzaddik, and hence you have a tana called Rabbi Yishmael. How do we know that Yishmael did tshuva? Because the pasuk states that when Avram died, Vayikberuoso, in the end of Parshas Chayesara, Vayikberuoso, Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav. Yitzchak and Yishmael buried him. And what that means is Yishmael allowed Yitzchak to go first. And apropos of our discussion last week, that's very important, because last week Yishmael didn't even rate Yitzchak as a son of Avram at all. But he did tshuva over that and says, no, he really takes precedence over me. So by the fact that Yitzchak is mentioned before Yishmael, we know that Yishmael let him go first, and that's an indication that Yishmael did tshuva. Except, just one moment, said Yonason Ivershutz. What about Ein Mukta M'mu'ucha B'Torah? If Ein Mukta M'mu'ucha B'Torah, you never know what's written first came first, so you don't know if it mentions Yitzchak first that he allowed Yitzchak to go first. Maybe Yishmael went first, and for other reasons Yitzchak is mentioned first. Except the answer is, it's in the same pasuk. Within the same pasuk, you know that the order is exactly the way that it happened. And therefore, the very same reason that we know that you can darshan the Torah with klal uprat, because you know which came first, is the very same way that we know that Yishmael did tshuva, because Yitzhak was mentioned before Yishmael, and in the same section, you know it came first. Putting it all together, said the young Yonason Ivershutz, Rabbi Yishmael Omer b'shloshesei midas haTorah nedreshes b'hem, means the fact that there was someone who was called Rabbi Yishmael, that tells you that the Torah can be darshaned in 13 ways. Because if there's someone called Rabbi Yishmael, that means Yishmael ended up as a tzaddik. The only way we know that is because Yitzhak is mentioned in the pasuk before. The only way we can be sure that that's actually happened first is because within one section, you know that what's written first happened first. And if that's true, then that gives you license to darshan klal uprat uprat uklal within the same section. If there wasn't such a person called Rabbi Yishmael, and we didn't know that, maybe there wouldn't be 13 rules. But Rabbi Yishmael Omer, the fact that there's someone called Rabbi Yishmael, that tells you that there are actually 13 rules, and klal uprat and prat uklal are amongst them. So that's the story, and he went on to become the Rabbi Yonos and Ibershutz, but this is a nugget from his youth with evil over there for this evening.